It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And boy, we have just closed the door on a March that came in like a lamb, grew to be a fat bit of mutton fully covered in wool, and sweated like a pig and waddled out the end of the month without any snow falling and possibly the warmest on record, or at least within the top five Marches on record in terms of warmth. So very dry, by the way. So vernal ponds are not there, which means things are going to be tough for our little frog buddies and for all those mallards and wood ducks and teal that are going to come back and want to have those little private places for liaisons with their girlfriends. So it's going to be a tough spring if we don't get some moisture pretty quick. But in the meantime, let's take a look at some of the things that are falling on our heads these days, including balsam poplars. Those are the balm of Gilead. They have big bronze-colored buds on them right now, and those buds are swelling, and they're sticky as all get out. And some people actually like the smell quite a bit. Other people find it kind of, you know, not so nice. But if you find one of these balm of Gileads, look at the buds. They're long and quite pointed, and they have lots of really sticky exudate on them. And if you squeeze them and then smell that, you'll get a real blast. Now, you know, when your grandpa was a young kid, they used to mix that sap from the balsam poplar with bear grease. And that made for the balm of Gilead, which was what they put on your chest when you had a cold, just like old Vicks Vapor Rub. This past week, lots of new birds showed up, including the red-winged blackbird, the American robin, the killdeer, American tree sparrows, song sparrows, fox sparrows. Yellow-bellied sapsuckers came in today or yesterday. Woodcock, red-tailed hawks, lots of birds have come back to the north. So just about everywhere you look, you're going to see some. Yesterday morning, I was coming out of the Y at about 6:30, quarter to 7, and I heard my first robin singing in the morning. Not the little cheap call, but the regular, I'm here and I'm saying this property belongs to me song that robins get out and sing when they are taking possession of areas. Lots of moths are out and butterflies are out. There are lots of the Compton's tortoiseshells, the sort of orange and black and maybe a little bit of brown and some white thrown in, sort of like a little mixture of confetti on the backs of their wings. If their wings are closed, they look just like the bark of a tree, because that's where those Compton's tortoiseshells have spent the entire winter, hiding in some crack in a tree, hoping not to be eaten by some inquisitive birds. So watch for Compton's, watch for mourning cloaks, watch for the Milbert's tortoiseshells. There are some commas. The gray, I think, and the green are both early season butterflies. And with this really warm weather we're going to have today, highs today could be in the 60s, could get close to 70 before the week is done. So watch for those butterflies, those that overwinter as adults, to be coming out, and check them out, see what they're doing, and enjoy their little colors as you get a chance to see them up flying around. Common ravens, there were a bunch of them playing in an updraft at the end of Prairie Lake. It was kind of funny to watch them. They were all hovering over this stand of Norway pine, and the wind was out of the west, and there's kind of a big mine dump at the east end of the lake, and that's where I was, and that's where the ravens were, and they could sort of sit just above this stand of Norway pine and just kind of hold position just without doing much, just kind of moving their wings and their tail a little bit. They'd stay in one spot, and then they'd kind of dip their heads down just a little bit, so they sort of slid forward. And as soon as they got past the edge of the stand of Norway pines, the wind would just jerk them right straight up in the air. And they go up like 40, 50 feet, just like right now. And as I said, there were five or six of them there, and they were just having a ball. They were obviously just playing themselves into a real fine state. I watched Ravens on Sunday this past week as well, and I was walking out. There's a nest in the tree farm that I live on, and I was walking out of the driveway, and I got to where I could be seen from the field, and the Raven was sitting in the top of a Norway along the edge of the field, just sort of watching. And as soon as he saw me moving, he started calling this low, not really a caw, but just kind of a keck, 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 keck. And he made this very quiet noise, and he sort of glided over the tree farm and over the area where I suspect the nest is. And the next thing I know, he's way, way up. He flew. Somehow he climbed way up in the sky. This is early afternoon on Sunday. And he's way up in the air, and he's run toward me, and right just above the trees, he pulls up and just kind of does a lazy little flyby. And oh man, all of my observations of the Ravens, they just look like they're having a lot of fun. They've been walking all over my driveway. I don't know if there's something that the female needs that he finds in the sand of my driveway, or if he's bringing her gravel, or if he's getting gravel himself. But every time I walk up and down my driveway, wherever there's a wet area, I can see his tracks. I got to looking at flowers this past week. Speckled alders. About 90% of the speckled alders that I tapped on Sunday were giving off pollen. And the female flowers, and if you're not familiar, the male flowers are the long, drapey catkins. The female flowers are just above them. If you kind of look up the stem above the catkins, you'll see these clusters of four, five, sometimes three red cone-like structures. But these are small. They're probably less than a quarter of an inch long. They might be a quarter of an inch long and about an eighth or maybe a little less in diameter, eighth of an inch or less in diameter. And they have these little, if you look at them with a hand lens, they have these little scales that lift up. And these actually will, once they're pollinated, they'll turn into a sort of a hard green cone-like structure. And in the fall and all through winter, and even now, you can see these pretty obviously, are these dark brown, they look like 3/8 of an inch long miniature pine cones. That's speckled alder. And if you check them out carefully, you can see a lot of interesting things there, from the cone to the flower that will be the cone to the flower that's providing the pollen that will make the female flower have seed. So check out the speckled alder. They're pretty interesting. Another couple of woody plants out there that are in flower right now, though just beginning to flower really, are the American and the beaked hazel. And if you're looking at them right now, this time of year, look at the catkins, which are the male flowers. And on the American hazel, the catkins hang long and straight. So those catkins, when they begin to really develop, they're going to be, maybe an inch and a half. Some of them might even get to 2 inches long and hanging straight as though they were stretched out straight down toward the ground. That's the American hazel. The beaked hazel, the catkin is much shorter, fatter, and it hangs in a kind of a curl. Now, varying degrees of curl. I looked at a bunch of them yesterday, and some of them actually looked like they could be straight, but basically they have a little bit of a curl to them. They open wider on one side than the other, so they get this little tilt to them, and they're kind of curled, and they're nowhere near as long. They're like fully developed. They might be, a big one might be an inch long. So that's the beaked hazel. This is a good time to figure out the difference between the American and the beaked hazel. Normally, I would tell you that in the summertime, you look at the new growth, and on the American hazel, the new growth will have hairs on its stem, and the beaked hazel will be smooth. And you can still see that if you're looking carefully. This is all building you up to going after looking at the female flowers on the American and the beaked hazels, which are indistinguishable from one another. They're both tiny. I mean, they are less than, well, the flower bud that they come out of is about a, well, maybe 3/16, maybe an eighth of an inch long. And at the very end of that little bud, there are going to be these, they're actually called stigmas, and they are red or carmine, and they're going to be sticking out like little fingers, like little octopus fingers out the end of this bud. And the more they develop, and over these warm days that we're having, I should expect that they will develop quite rapidly, the easier those flowers will be to see. Now, on Sunday, there were, well, maybe 10% of the plants I looked at had flowers on them in one state of bloom or another. None of them looked like they were fully blooming yet. The thing here is, if you're looking at them in full sun, you're likely to find them with more flower. Those that I found in the woods, in the shade, or down at the base of the, you know, in the forest, very few of those. In fact, none of them had any discernible flowers opening yet. So that's American and beaked hazel, two other plants you can look for to be in flower. If you're walking around in the woods right now, look for the hepatica leaves, which are sort of three-lobed, like a very big three-leafed clover. And they're evergreens, so they're not too hard to find. And look for those, and it won't be too long, and they'll be starting to bring their flowers up and have the flowers start to bloom. The other green leaf that is an evergreen out there that I was looking at this past weekend was Trailing Arbutus, which has a lovely five-petaled white flower that is just unbelievably delightful to smell. It's sort of a sweet, spicy kind of an odor. So if you're walking around in the woods and you spot these sort of lime, I won't call them lime green because they're not that yellow, but they're more yellow-green than the hepatica leaf, and they're sort of oval-shaped, shaped kind of like a football in cross-section, or more like a rugby ball. They're a bit more round on the ends than a football would be if you cut it in half the long way. So look for these leaves, and then look at the stems, and the stems should have cinnamon, bristly cinnamon hairs all over the stems. And if you see those bristly cinnamon hairs, start looking around. And what I found this weekend was just flower buds, nothing that was anywhere close to blooming yet, but the flower buds are definitely there and starting to show off. My neighbor, Donette, called me the other day and said there was a huge pile of feathers in the field on along Blue Heron Road. And I went over there, and boy, talk about a grisly tableau of death and life. It looks as if a coyote may have ambushed a trumpeter swan between two low hills and caught it before it could fly to safety. That's the only thing I could come up with, because there were feathers all over the place and nothing there but feathers. So the body, whatever took the swan, took the body away. Knocked a lot of feathers out of it, but took the body away. And there wasn't even a lot of feathers stuck together by skin. So I expect that the feathers that were there were probably the result of the battle between the coyote and the swan. And so it was kind of, you know, sad. But at the same time, I had to tell myself, you know, it's pretty amazing that there are now enough trumpeter swans in the state, in this part of the state, that something like this could even happen. Because when you think about it, you know, 10 years ago, there weren't enough trumpeter swans that it could even be possible for that to happen. So I don't doubt that the unmated half of that trumpeter swan arrangement will have no trouble finding a mate. There are plenty around, so we'll probably have more trumpeter swans come fall again. I was looking at red maple buds this past week. They are very swollen. They're little fat balls right now, bright red with little yellow lines on them. I think if you keep an eye on those, you'll probably see maples coming into flower in a very short period of time, very soon. And finally this week, a couple of notes. Typically, over the years, something like robins, the range of their first arrival runs from March 7th to April 10th, so it's more than a month. But the great blue herons, their range of arrival runs from about April or March 24th to about April 4th or 5th. So it's about 10 days, usually right around the 1st of April, and that's where we're at. And with this warm weather and south winds, I can't help but think that one of you is going to call and tell me that you've seen a blue heron in the North Country in the next few days at the very latest. So if that's you, give us a call here and let us know that there are blue herons hanging out at your place. We'd love to hear that. And finally, this week, I wanted to mention the vernal ponds that we talked about right at the start of the show. We talked about how it's been so dry this month and how few ponds there are. This is the time of year when whatever water there is out there, the wood frogs and the boreal or western chorus frogs are going to show up and start singing. And just to give you a heads up so you'll know who's who, this is the wood frog. Kind of sounds like ducks quacking. And that will be one of the first that you're going to hear. The other one that over the years has kind of vied for first frog heard singing in the spring is the boreal or western chorus frog. And this is a little frog. This is a frog that's probably an inch long at most. And by the way, both of these frogs and the spring peeper and the gray tree frog, all four of those frogs actually overwinter in the leaf litter. So they're out there right now crawling out of the leaf litter. They've been frozen all winter. They're going to come back to life, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're coming back to life. They're going to jump in these vernal ponds, and they're going to start to sing. And this is what you'll hear when the western chorus frog starts to sing. Kind of reminds you of somebody running their thumb down a comb, doesn't it? So that's the chorus frog. The other one, the one that sounded like ducks, that's the wood frog. And probably by the time we talk again next week, we'll review the next two that you're likely to hear, which are probably the spring peeper and maybe the American or the gray tree frog. But we'll get to those next week. Two at a time is plenty. Listen for those, and when you hear them, send it along. We're waiting to hear from you. That's the Phenology Show for today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk again next week. It's time for TalkBack. TalkBack is your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got an observation you'd like to share, or a comment you'd like to make, or a question you'd like to ask. Doesn't matter. We're waiting from you, and you can get in touch with us by calling our TalkBack number. That is 999-9876. You can also reach us by email at comments@kaxe.org. You can reach me personally by sending your observations to J. Latimer, that's J-L-A-T-I-M-E-R, at kaxe.org. Or you can write to us. We really like getting your letters. You can send them to 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 55744. We did hear from a bunch of you this past week. Lots of things are happening in the area, and lots of observations are being made, including these from our friends down at the Forest View Middle School Bird Club in Baxter. John and Shania report.
We are finally seeing birds. Jared saw ducks, Canada geese, and lots of American crows. Joey is seeing swans and snow geese flying over an Oki Lake Road.
Adam saw American crows and an active bald eagle nest. Jason also saw a bald eagle.
Savannah saw American crows, lots of American robins, and black-capped chickadees. Travis saw 5 red-tailed hawks and lots of American robins.
Thomas is seeing wild turkeys. Sam gave the following phenology account for March.
13th, he saw a very big moth. Chipmunks were out and ring-billed gulls were seen. 14th, deer ticks were found on dogs. 16th, he saw an American crow with a stick. 18th, Canada geese flying over his farm and 2 hawks are now in woods. 19th, red-winged blackbirds returned to sandhill cranes were seen. 20th, American robin numbers are increased. 21st, speckled alder is pollinating and small orange butterfly was seen. 22nd, killdeer arrived. 24th, American crows were seen again in nesting materials and wood frogs are in the swamp.
He also noted that a solid owl is still calling and will no rain some annual vernal ponds did not develop.
Our alumni report from Kevin reports seeing Canada geese, wood ducks, song sparrows, and eastern bluebirds. Ben is busy getting ready to work on his blocks from the Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas and collecting data on red-headed woodpecker colonies with his grandfather.
Well, that's our report for this week. See you outside.
Thank you, John and Shania. That was a good report. Lots of interesting things going on down there. A lot of things that you will be seeing here. Lots of American robins coming into the area. Lots of red-tailed hawks. Chipmunks are getting active. I'm seeing a lot more of those. Sandhill cranes. I heard a killdeer this yesterday morning. I was out for a hike on Sunday, and the speckled alders that I encountered, I would have to say 90%. I probably snapped the catkins on 20 or 25 different speckled alder bushes wherever I was in the woods, and all but one gave up pollen when I snapped the catkins. So lots of things going on, and those kids down in Baxter are catching up with a lot of it. Thank you very much. I have to admit that the vernal ponds issue is kind of a serious one. We do need some moisture. And those ponds are important to a lot of animals, including the wood frogs, the spring peepers, and all the rest. And though I haven't heard them yet, I would expect any day now to hear frogs beginning to sing. And, of course, you probably are going to hear, first of all, the wood frog, which kind of sounds like ducks quacking, and then the little, I think they call it now the boreal chorus frog. It used to be called a western chorus frog. I think its new name is the boreal chorus frog. And that one sings a little bit of a trill, kind of like somebody running their thumb down a comb. So keep an ear out for frogs beginning to sing in the next few days. And eastern bluebirds are coming. So if you haven't gotten out and opened up your bluebird boxes and cleaned out last year's nests, you better get after that. This is the time of year you want to do that. They made some mention of bald eagles, and we got a note from Pam, who works at the DNR. She said, I live on Little White Oak Lake. Yesterday, there were 32 bald eagles on the ice. Today, I counted 67. What will tomorrow bring? Lots of bald eagles coming into the area. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. When I was a child, you might see one bald eagle every 4 or 5 years. It was a stunning development to actually see a bald eagle. And now 67 of them on Little White Oak Lake in one day. That's a pretty amazing turnaround for the bald eagles, and we've got to be glad for that. We also heard this week from Ruth, who called from the Grand Rapids area.
On March 27th, this past Saturday, I went over to Wisconsin. And going over the harbor there, there were thousands and thousands of seagulls sitting around on every available space and only a couple of Canadian geese. Then I was about 7 miles south of Superior on Highway 53, and there were 2 live deer standing by the side of the road. Now, the one buck, and I know he was a buck because he had a 6-point antlers. And I know that because they were still on them. And they were nice and shiny and pointy. And I know that before, John's always talked about how the antlers don't fall off. Well, here's another date, March 27th.
Thank you, Ruth. That's definitely getting toward the tail end. I think our good friend, the split-hand scofflaw, still holds the record with April 8th as the latest date that a deer was observed still wearing its antlers from the previous year. As usual, these deer tend to be a little bit smaller, probably weren't involved in breeding, and as a result, kept their testosterone levels a little bit higher, elevated through the winter, and their antlers didn't fall off when others might have. So there's always a few. You know, it's a bell curve. There's always some that just don't get the message, haven't heard. Oh, am I supposed to drop my antlers? I got a call the other day from Gail, who lives up on the edge of McKinney Lake, and she sent me, I had her to send me an email to describe what it was we were talking about on the phone, but there was a great horned owl in her yard, and it was on the ground and being followed and harassed by a flock of crows. And Gail, naturally seeing this owl on the ground walking, thought possibly the bird was injured. And so a friend of hers went out to try and capture it. I said, take a coat or a blanket or something and throw it over the top of the bird so that it doesn't react and hurt you or hurt itself. And a few minutes later, the friend came back and said, the owl flew off, reluctantly. Actually, you know, the great horned owls and the crows have a long, long history of animosity towards each other. The crows, during the day when they can find an owl, will harass it and harass it and harass it until the owl got down on the ground and tried to walk away from the harassment. But at night, the owl comes back and evens the score by eating crows. So I guess there's reason to be upset on both sides of that one. But it was pretty funny to hear about this owl that actually got down on the ground and tried to walk away from the harassment. It must get pretty bad when you have to get down and walk away. Our final call this week comes from Mr. Holmes' fifth grade class at Roosevelt Elementary School in Virginia, and Brittany is our reporter this week.
Alex spotted a constant tortoiseshell butterfly on March 17th. It was orange and black. The kids in my class saw a red-winged blackbird March 18th and a robin on March 15th. After the last snow melted in the cul-de-sac at Miley's house, there was a mud puddle with the bottom covered with earthworms that had turned white and yucky. There was no use trying to save them. The crows are nesting in the woods behind Josh's house. He wonders if this is a good idea to have them so near. Emma reports that a line of cars had to stop by Silver Lake on Friday to let a line of ducks cross the street. Isaiah's backyard smells like mud in the afternoon. Kira saw two snowshoe hares last Wednesday that were just starting to turn brown. From our classroom, we can see flocks of ring-billed gulls circling high above the lake. They look like hundreds of bits of dandelion fluff against the blue sky. Other signs of spring that we've observed lately are finches turning yellow, chickadees singing the cheeseburger song loudly, Canada geese honking when they fly overhead, many bald eagles and ravens, and a guy wearing shorts with really white skinny legs and knobby knees riding his bike past the school. Mr. Holmes bought a cap for a maple tree last Friday for 75 cents and a piece of tubing for 25 cents. He collected 3 gallons of sap from a maple tree behind his house last weekend, and we're trying to boil it into syrup. It makes our classroom smell like sugar instead of like hamster cage. That's all for our report this week. Thank you. Bye.
Even if you don't get any syrup, if it makes the room smell like sugar and maples, it's way better than the hamster cage. I love it. Oh, and the other comment that I really liked there was the beautiful picture you posed of the gulls looking like dandelion fluff up above Silver Lake. Nice images. Thank you so much for your great report. Compton's tortoiseshell butterflies, definitely. With these warm days, keep watching for them. They're a medium size. That is, I would say 2 to maybe 2 1/4, 2 1/2 inch wingspan butterfly that is primarily orange and either dark brown or black with a few white spots thrown in. It's sort of a confetti of color. It's not really a solid patch of red or orange and a solid patch of black. It's more like a dot of orange here and a dot of brown over there and then a dot of white and then some more brown and some more orange thrown in there. So you'll recognize them when you see them. And along with those, watch for the morning cloaks. We'll be seeing more and more of those as well. So lots of good things there. I still love the boiling the sugar to get rid of the smell of the hamster cage. Can't go wrong. Gotta be a good thing. Final note this week comes from our good friend Dallas over in Akeley, and he said, the first song sparrows this morning, the first fox sparrow yesterday, leafhoppers. John Weber mentioned seeing leafhoppers. Those are small insects that get out and kind of go move around on the plants. You may get a chance to see some of those if you're looking at plants. Look, try and find a nice green plant. Usually this time of year it's going to be a blade of grass. But if you're lucky, you might find a leafhopper. John Weber heard a wood frog calling. And on Saturday, golden eyes and a Milbert's tortoiseshell butterfly, morning doves were singing. Bluebirds came back to that area, and red-tailed hawks. And Friday night, they heard woodcock painting in the Akeley area. So, boy, spring is just busting out all over. I hope you're paying attention. And when you see something that you want to report, why, please get in touch with us. That's our Talkback Show.
You're listening to Phenology Plus on KAXE Community Radio for Northern Minnesota, 91.7 on the Iron Range, Emily and Effie, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, 105.3 in Bemidji, audio streaming on the internet at KAXE.org. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Coming up, Harry Hutchins marks the arrival of Juncos, and forestry and shoreline specialist Andy Ahrens tells us about the Itasca County Soil and Water District's annual native tree and plant sale. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by Dale's Auto Body in Grand Rapids. For 25 years at Dale's, their job has been to make every effort before, during, and after repairs to eliminate problems throughout the process. Dale's Auto Body is committed to customer satisfaction. We also have support from the Bonner Eye Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Bonner Eye Clinic, Drs. Bonner, Mariano, and Kincannon have served the eye care needs of Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Iron Range for over 45 years. Located at 1542 Golf Course Road, the Bonner Eye Clinic is proud to support KAXE. A couple of other talkback notes from KAXE listener Ed Dallas down in the Deerwood area. Ed called today and told us that last Tuesday on the 23rd, he saw his first and heard his first red-winged blackbird. Also on the 23rd, his first eastern bluebird. On the 23rd, the Compton's tortoiseshell butterfly. Then on Wednesday, the 24th, Ed saw his first fox sparrow. On the 27th, heard his first sandhill cranes. And then yesterday, on the 29th, first morning cloak butterfly and eastern comma butterfly. Ed also said the ice on his small lake, Cascade Lake, went out on Monday afternoon, the 29th, and Ed saw the first seagull land on Cascade Lake shortly after that. Also in the area of ice out, John from rural Bovee called earlier today, said the ice went out on Round Lake in rural Bovee this morning on the 30th. Tell us when the ice goes out on your lake and when the migrating birds return to your feeder or shoreline. Our talkback number is 218-999-9876. Our email address is comments@kaxe.org. Due to our warm, dry weather, the DNR and Forest Service have issued burning restrictions for most counties in the KAXE listening area. Burning permits will not be issued over the next 4 to 6 weeks or until fire danger passes and spring greenup occurs. Call KAXE for more information or just check with your local DNR or Forest Service offices. Our number is 218-326-1234. Harry Hutchins is a forest ecologist and teaches in the forestry program at Itasca Community College. Harry arrived at our studios out of breath from a bike ride to talk about juncos and other migrating birds. But first, he had this bit of news.
It's the first time Grand Rapids, Itasca County, has never had any snow. It's never snowed during the month of March. First time ever. Recorded.
Well, there's still a day left, but it ain't gonna happen.
No. So we lived through it, and I hope I never live through it again.
Harry, I'm glad you wanted to talk about juncos today, because we saw our first juncos in our yard over the weekend.
Yeah, they came up with that south wind, didn't they? And yeah, juncos, back in my day, it was a new species in my backyard of junco. It's just a subspecies now, and that is the Oregon junco. And the Oregon junco is looks like the slate color, with the male has a very dark hood, and then it breaks out into this very kind of orangish breast, and to the sides, pinkish sides. Real beautiful bird, striking, especially the male. Now you'll also see some female juncos.
So we're likely to see that in Minnesota?
Yeah, but probably one out of every 100 juncos might be a Oregon junco. And like I say, I had them up in Wabana, but I used to band birds then and really was into it. And I have never had one down here downtown in Grand Rapids since I've lived here, which has been since 2000. So anyways, put out millet, and you'll get juncos. And check your junco flocks out, because this Oregon subspecies is pretty neat.
So the darker head.
Yeah.
You'll see, down to the, really below the neck.
Right.
Almost to the chest, a darker head, and then those softer colors on the side, huh?
Yeah, and this is just a different race now. There used to be four junco species. Now they've split them up into slate-colored. And then there's four races of the slate color. So okay. Probably in 10 years, it'll become a different species again. But they're doing some neat stuff now. The males are fluttering up and attacking each other now. The females have arrived. They arrive about a week later, and they're starting to court those females. So a lot of neat interactions going on with the juncos. Now, the female junco, regular slate-colored one, does have a little bit of pinkish on the sides. So don't get that confused with an Oregon junco. If you look at your field guides, it's a very, very different orange color. Not just the little tan sidings and back of the nape that you might see on a female slate-colored.
And they're just passing through, right? And how long will they be?
Well, they'll be here.
All summer
here.
Long?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. They nest in, you know, probably about as far south as we get them to nest is maybe Scenic State Park. So you'll see them. And they're in northern Beltrami. And so we're kind of on the southern edge of the range here. And
so
of course,
a lot of them will go as far as Canada then.
Oh, they'll go way up, yeah. They're a boreal bird. They're a ground nesting bird. They nest all throughout the UP. If you go on vacations in northern Wisconsin and the UP and northern Minnesota, you'll see them in the summertime. They are very quiet, and they hang out in the understory. And there's usually enough ground cover that unless you get off the trail in the portage and actually start tramping around, then you'll start finding their nests. So if you're a guy that's marking timber in the summertime, you'll all of a sudden see something flutter out of the ground. It's either going to be probably an ovenbird or a junco. They're probably the two most common ground nesters. Along with that might be something like a white-throated sparrow or even a song sparrow, too.
Ed Dallas reported a fox sparrow this morning, his first sparrow in the Deerwood area. That's south, down near, south and east of Brainerd. What about the other sparrows?
Well, you know, we got fox sparrows. Tree sparrows probably should be some of the first ones passing through. If people haven't already seen those, that's the one with the little black dot, clear breast. And then the fox sparrow, and probably the last ones will be the fox sparrow and the song sparrow coming through now. And the last ones will be the chipping sparrow, and then end it all with the Harris sparrow. And that's probably the most abundant sparrows that we have. If you get down by where Ed Dallas is calling from, you might even see near the end some field sparrows. They have a really neat call, but that's even getting on the northern edge of their range.
A couple of quick comments from listeners. We just had a sighting east of Effie on the Big Fork River, a first morning dove. Some morning doves will be here all winter, won't they?
Yes.
Okay.
Because people are feeding them now, and they're, if there's millet around, they'll stay.
They'll hang. Well, and we also had our first egret report on the Mississippi River Saturday in the Brainerd area.
All right.
Our blue heron.
Yeah, and of course, my favorites here, and maybe John mentioned it earlier, as I was gasping on my bike, and that was the hooded mergansers.
Harry Hutchins is a forest ecologist and instructor at Itasca Community College, and he joins us on Tuesdays for a talk on the wild side. You're listening to Phenology Plus on 91.7 KAXE. The Clog, or K-Log, is KAXE's collection of blogs. It's at our website, kaxe.org, and this week, John Latimer has posted some of his phenology notes from past Aprils and Mays, including pictures and information about black-backed woodpeckers and morning cloak butterflies. That's at the Clog at kaxe.org. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency needs more volunteers to monitor the water quality of our lakes and streams. The agency considers about 2,000 lakes and streams to have harmful levels of pollutants. Many Lake Association members are water quality testers, but more volunteers are needed. PCA officials have identified about 3,000 heavily used lakes that still need volunteers to do routine testing. For more information, call KAXE 218-326-1234. It must be spring because Andy Ahrens is back. Andy's a forestry and shoreland specialist with Itasca County Soil and Water Conservation District. And it's time for again for their spring native tree and plant sale. And Andy, I always look forward to visiting with you it's March, April, I guess.
And yeah. Feels like June this year.
It does. It really does.
Yeah. It's an early start to spring, so.
But trees, shrubs, wildflowers, and grasses, and the list is long, and they're for different types of places like lower wetlands or upland mixes. And tell us about the wildflower and grass seed mixtures you're offering this year.
Okay. The upland, we have an upland mix and then a wetland mix. The upland mix is 27 species total, consisting of 23 species of wildflowers, 4 species of showy grasses. So it's strong on the wildflowers, strong on the blooms. We worked with them closely, the vendor, to pick showy grasses as well because, we found people like it showy.
Okay, now what do you mean by an upland site?
It's a versatile mix. You know, we only offer 2 mixes, upland and wetland. So the upland mix, we put it together specifically so it would suit a range of sites. And the good thing is you have 30 species there. There's some stuff in there that likes it a little drier. There's some stuff that is going to be, not real wet, but a little more moist. We tell people as long as you don't have sugar sand or, clay is probably not the best, but if you're anywhere in between, you probably don't want to be right on the water's edge, you should get, at least half of those species. And that's still a pretty good number.
Well, let's look out our window right now. You see our rain garden down there at the bottom of this hill. Would the upland mix look good on the side of our hill above the rain garden?
I think that'd be a great spot for it, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the wetland mix now.
The wetland mix is more wetland than it's been in the past. We went with a specific, to get technical, it's called the Bowser W2 mix, and it's what our wetland guys in the office like to use for wetland restoration. So,
tried and true then.
Yeah, that's a mix that part of the reason we're carrying it is if you have, there's other vendor options, and we're going to tell you about them. But if you're doing a wetland restoration project, maybe with us or just because you want to, that's the mix for you. It's 31 species total, 17 species of native wildflowers, 14 species of native grasses, sedges, and there's some bulrushes in there even. And that's one that you're going to want to put, in a wetland, real wet, soggy ground. It's not going to be as showy. It's a little stronger on the grasses, which from a conservation standpoint, a wetland restoration standpoint, that's really what you want. So that's not a wildflower garden mix.
Now, we're not going to be able to cover this very, very long list of shrubs and trees and grasses, but that reminds me to remind our listeners that there's pictures of all the species online at your website, and that's www.itascaswcd.org.
That's correct, yeah.
Now, you don't have to live in Itasca County to order these, do you?
You don't. That's a common question we get, and we actually put it on the form this year, on the back of the order form, I think. We always remind people that most soil and water offices sell at least trees and shrubs, but we're one of the only ones that also do the wildflowers and the grasses and the mixes, the seed mixes. So we just remind people, if you're closer to Aitken and you want trees and shrubs, you might want to look at them, but we welcome anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, what's Bowser? You said our Bowser list. Bowser is an acronym for
getting
what?
Getting technical on you.
That's all right.
The Board of Water and Soil Resources, and they're a state agency, and they basically support soil and water offices throughout the state. We get a little bit of general funding from them every year, and we get our cost share money from them. And that's something else I can maybe mention. We do get a little bit of cost share money every year for water and soil saving projects, and it's cut in half this year compared to other years because, natural resource monies are down as well. In some regards, we got that Lassard money, but...
Mm-hmm. Legacy money.
Legacy money, yep. But we've got cost share money that we need to spend, and there's interested people. I've been contacting people. They're interested, but they don't have the other half. Usually it's 50%. There is potential to go up to 75%, so... If someone's listening and they've been thinking about an extensive shoreland re-veg planting or a rain garden, call me.
Okay. How big a patch of land would you say is, would make someone think, hey, I might want to buy something? Or do you need an acre, a half acre, 100 feet of shoreline? What would you say?
The full spectrum. I think a lot of our clients, our minimum order for wildflowers is a four-pack for 4 plants. a lot of our clients just buy a few and put them in the backyard, and then it gets as extreme as 10 feet wide and 100 feet along the shoreline, planting a flower every foot.
How about hardiness? Spectrum. These are native plants. I expect them to probably be hardy. They can withstand a variety.
Yeah, that's one of the things we really emphasize are, for one, Minnesota natives, and secondly, northern Minnesota hardy species. Once you know these species and you start looking around, you'll see them in the ditches and you'll see them in the county. And one of the benefits of natives, they require less maintenance down the road. The first couple of years, if it's droughty, we recommend watering, but after that, even if it's droughty, they should be able to withstand it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got a spot down on the corner of my lot that I'd love to plant something there, but the snowplow comes by and pushes a lot of snow on that site. Is that going to bother them in the winter?
Not for the wildflowers and the grasses, because you know, they're not woody, and they die back every year, and they come back new, new shoots every year. So, and people that like to keep a planting a little more showy, we even tell people you can go in there once it's dormant and cut those stems, because they're going to start over the next year anyway. Because otherwise, those brown stems are going to be in there, and if you're looking for more color, you might want to get that out of there. There's other benefits too, to knocking seed off, and if you're doing shrubs, anything woody that comes back on that same stem, then where a snowplow shaves his, shaves the blade across, isn't going to be a good spot.
Okay. Now, I always like to ask you to tell us about one or two of your favorite plants. What do you have in mind today?
Yeah, well, you mentioned it's getting to be quite a list, and we're intentionally trying to add a few every year, and part of that reason is for people that want to do these extensive rain gardens or shoreline re-veg plantings, you know, we like to see at least 10 or so species in there. So we need to have quite a list to fulfill that need. Probably the one we're most excited about this year that we added is crabapple. It produces about a 1-inch diameter fruit. I think probably the best application for that would be deer. If you're looking to attract deer on your hunting property, crabapple's a good one. It's not necessarily one that people eat too often themselves. And then a few wildflower species that we added include fireweed, one called Coreopsis, and then a sunflower. It has two names, stiff sunflower or giant sunflower. Fireweed is a purplish bloom.
That stiff sunflower, I think I have a couple of these in my yard now. Don't mistake them for that big
seeded. Exactly, that's
sunflower.
A good point.
Yeah.
Yep, this is it's a daisy-looking bloom, and it's 3 inches in diameter or so. And the picture that Scott's looking at right now on a laminated sheet was taken in a ditch by Cohasset. And once you know these things, you'll see them. The sunflower, it's a tall one, and so I'm kind of curious to see how it's going to do. It's often 4 or 5 feet tall. I've seen it as high as 7, 8 feet, to be honest. And the Coreopsis is also a daisy-appearing type, I would say, shorter growing, you know, 2, 3 feet. Those are both moist to dry site species. And then the fireweed is more of a moist to wet, or moist to... moderately wet. You know, you wouldn't want it right up next to the water's edge, but...
Okay. How about attracting butterflies or bees and other wildlife? Are these flower mixes pretty good for that?
Yeah, a lot of the wildflowers, you know, if it creates a bloom, it's probably going to attract some sort of butterfly, or some of them attract hummingbirds. I don't think there's certain ones that really attract the flies and such. We try to avoid those. We had panicled aster, and that one... It would just be swarms of flies. So not so many of these are like that. They're more wild butterflies and birds and hummingbirds.
Well, Andy Ahrens, we're talking with Andy from the Itasca County Soil and Water Conservation Office, and it's their 2010 Native Tree and Plant Sale. Andy's a forestry and shoreland specialist there. And Andy, if people want to order, and now you've left some order forms with us here at the station. We always give out a few.
Absolutely.
Here. People can stop by the station and get them. Online? Can people order online?
You can't order online, but you can go there and look at the pictures, and you can print the order form and then mail it in and drop it off.
And is there a deadline?
We're taking orders through April. April 30, I believe, is the deadline. And then pickup will be May 20 and 21 at the fairgrounds. It's a Thursday and Friday.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Scott.
Andy Ahrens from the Itasca County Soil and Water Office. Call us if you want more information about Andy's program. Our number, 218-326-1234. The Brainerd Chapter of Wild Ones is holding a landscape planning night on Thursday, April 8th. That'll be at the Northland Arboretum in Brainerd. Bring your project sketches, yard photos, and ideas for landscaping with native plants to create a backyard habitat. Business meetings at 6 and the planning discussion begins at 7. The meeting is free and open to everyone. And the Itasca Woodland Advisory Committee is hosting a tree planting workshop where you can learn about native plant communities, planting options, materials, and techniques. You'll head out to the woods to learn how to plant and protect native tree seedlings. That workshop is Friday, April 16th from 1 to 3 in the afternoon, and that's at the University of Minnesota's North Central Research Center in Grand Rapids. Deep Portage Learning Center is located on 6,100 acres of forest land in Cass County between Hackensack and Longville. The center offers a variety of outdoor activities and classes for all ages. Deep Portage also has over 18 miles of hiking and ski trails, an interpretive center, and educational programs open to the public year-round. Online at deep-portage.org or call KAXE for more information. 218-326-1234. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by Atchison Tire Company in Grand Rapids. Locally owned for more than 90 years, Atchison Tire has offered new tires and repair services for generations of their customers online at AtchisonTire.com. And we have support from Itasca Surgical Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Itasca Surgical Clinic, patients are provided with personal screening, diagnosis, and treatment of a full range of medical conditions, all in a caring environment. Thanks to Itasca Surgical Clinic of Grand Rapids for supporting Phenology Plus. And that's Phenology Plus for this Tuesday evening. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Thanks for listening.